Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It is Thursday, the 12th of May. It's just coming up to 5 past 5 and you are listening to Men Talk this week. With me in the studio today, Jamie Stonehewer, Quinton Seller, and hopefully on his way, possibly stuck in traffic, Andreas Gallardo. But for the moment, Jamie and Quinton, how are you both doing?
Good afternoon, Hannah.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Hannah.
Hi.
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm all right, thank you. Nice to see you both. There's this Agatha Christie trial, which is going on at the moment, and I wasn't taking a massive amount of interest until I saw, just before I came on air today, I was watching a video that Peter Andre posted on social media, and they just played a bit of that clip on the news there. And I thought he made a really interesting point. Basically, one of the things, the headlines that's been all over the press in the last few days because of this trial going on, is that when they were together 15 years ago, she apparently said some not nice things about his genitalia. The word chipolata was used, that's all I'll say, and you don't need to say any more, really. And that has gone out loads over the press in the last kind of 15 years or so. And he decided to speak out. He said, yeah, you know, I've been the butt of the joke for years now. But just imagine if a man had made some kind of unfavourable comment like that about a woman's genitalia, how different... this is what he was saying, how different it would be. And he was thinking that if he was to say something like that, people would go mad. You can't say that, you can't say that. Whereas if a woman says it about a guy, it's seen as a little bit funny. And I thought that was a very, very good point.
I agree.
I think it's really not nice, is it? Why should it be seen as being funny? It's not funny at all.
No,
I think it's a very private comment, or sorry, very private situation to generally. It's where you see, I think, more and more nowadays, or even as you've gone back 15 years, that people who are labelled under the WEG group, they'll make comments, and it's... Is it designed just to get a reaction, to get public press? But there's no need to publicise that kind of information.
No, I mean she's admitted that it wasn't even true. But at the same time, you know, if you're intimate with someone, you would hope that there's a certain amount of trust there that people don't start talking about things like that in the press and publicly. I mean, it's just horrendous. It's easy for people who aren't involved to laugh and think it's funny, but imagine if it was you. Imagine if it was people you knew, and how horrible that would be.
When this thing started in the press, I thought, what are they trying to sell? But of course, this court case has been going for quite a while. So why has Peter Andre got involved? I don't understand.
No. But it was just the fact that it was all to do with people saying, I don't really understand, okay, to be fine. Honest. But no, he hasn't got involved. It was the fact that this Rebecca Vardy was supposed to have said this
about him.
Told lots of people. I don't get what that's to do with Colleen Rooney either, to be honest. But I just thought his point was interesting, that if he was to say something like that, I don't think people would laugh about it in the same way. People would say a man shouldn't be saying that kind of thing about a woman. Do you know what I mean? I just thought it was interesting.
Old days, gentlemen and ladies, they just don't seem to exist anymore in the public eye, really. I can't think of anyone that you could hold a candle to and say, well, that person's, you know, 100%. Well, there's a few, but there's, you know, it seems to be, public eye seems to be a different thing to the glamour days.
Yeah.
But I mean, does that mean that somebody nowadays could actually sue you for defamation of genitalia?
Well...
Rather than defamation of character.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? I'm sure that's the thing in America.
Hundreds of lawyers going, ooh, that's a good idea.
Exactly. I'll write that one down. Think. Yep. Thank you, Quinton. Anyone listening, if you would like to get involved with Men Talk and the different subjects that we're talking about, you're more than welcome. You can give us a call on 952-78-4000. You can send an email to studio@tre.radio. You can send a WhatsApp to +34 645 99 67 95. There's an article here, which isn't a massive thing to discuss. I just wondered how you would feel about doing something like this. The headline is, "Will you dare climb 70 feet up the Cutty Sark's rigging?" Apparently, it's London's newest and scariest attraction. Do you like heights? Is that something that excites you or fills you with dread?
I do like heights. It wouldn't fill me with dread, but I couldn't physically do it. Okay. But I think, it's exciting. It's as long as it's safe to actually be able to do that kind of thing as people did day by day years ago, then it'd be fine.
Yeah. We've got a caller on the line. You're live on TRE.
This is Brian in Callahander, just under comment you made, Rebecca Verdi and Peter Andre.
Yes.
Apparently, they had liaisons a number of years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
She did an interview at the time and said that his manhood was compared to a Cipollata.
Mm-hmm.
Flagged him off in all sorts of ways. And he has lived with this kind of flagging for all those years.
Yeah.
But he never retaliated, never said anything about it. The court brought it up, basically saying that Rebecca Verdi had done this before, that Colleen, what's her name, Rooney, isn't the first time. But today, Peter Andre finally stood up for men.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm very proud. I wouldn't be a fan, but I'm very proud of him, because between the Johnny Depp thing going on and now this with Peter Andre, men are usually guilty until proven innocent in all of these things. Whereas if a bloke says something about a girl, everybody kind of goes, oh, that's a terrible thing, he shouldn't have said it. And I think it's about time that the guys like Johnny Depp stood up and said, hold on a second, the men are not always wrong.
Yes, 100%. I'm with you, Brian. Definitely. I'm really glad Peter Andre spoke out. I'm with you all the way.
And many years ago during a talent competition, Hannah, you and I had intimate enclosures when I was putting a sound mic on to you. Yeah, and I never told anybody about it.
Oh, good. Me neither.
Until now.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You just said it on air, Brian.
No, but they don't know what we're talking about. Anyway, keep up the show. Love us.
Thank you very much, Brian. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. So, climbing.
I'd be first up. I'd shoot up.
Would you? Yeah. You'd like to do something like that?
But, we were discussing this before. It's a bit different climbing up the rigging in a dock in London than it would be in the open seas. You know?
Yes. Oh,
I mean, the people that used to have to work, it was the lowest job to get up there and drop the sails. So I don't mind heights.
Okay.
Used to do a lot of rock climbing when I was younger. But then again, you occasionally get the old leg tremble.
Yeah.
Up ladders now.
It's funny, when you do things like this, when you're doing any kind of climbing, abseiling, whatever, you're not going to fall and hurt yourself. Obviously, you're all rigged up. You've got all the equipment. So it's not even the fear of falling, is it? You can pretty much take that out of the equation. It's just the whole mind concept of, look how high I am. You don't actually need to worry about falling because you've got all the equipment on. So it's a real mind over matter thing, isn't it?
I think it's just another way of making money out of a tourist attraction as well, because people walk up and down the London Eye all the time now, don't they? They walk over the
The pods.
The other thing, the Millennium Dome. They walk over the top of that all the time, the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Yeah.
So people stop looking at it, so now you walk over the top attached to it.
Yeah.
It's just another way of getting money out of a tourist attraction.
Yeah, no,
and
definitely.
Good for them. It needs money to keep it in sort of working order. Living history.
Talking of heights, I don't know if you've seen this. I hadn't seen it until I saw this article. Would you live in the £1.5 billion coffee stirrer? I don't know if that's its official name or what the Daily Mail have just called it. It's the Big Apple's newest and skinniest skyscraper. It's really, really tall and really, really thin. I read, how much was the penthouse? £50.7 million. And someone bought the penthouse just by taking a virtual tour. Would you like to live somewhere like that?
I would do, because I like heights. Living up, the views would be incredible.
Yeah.
And when you're inside out, you won't realise how thin it is.
No, I wonder if it would. I mean, I'd imagine that you'd kind of feel the wind a bit, though, which I wouldn't like.
Yeah. I like the flat. The fact that the flats are one per floor, so you've got a 360 yes. degree view.
Yeah, that's but a I'd great
be,
thing.
Things like that's all I'd be worried about, fires and stuff.
I think
that would be my first thought was, oh, hang on, how do you get down in a fire? Because there won't be any stairs from the top that you could walk down. So, but there will be, but I mean, it wouldn't be looking how tall that is.
Mm.
But the fact you've got 360 degree views in New York would be stunning.
Mm, would. Yeah, but I agree that the health and safety issues, they have to think things like that. I read this week that Apple has retired the iPod after 21 years. They're not making it anymore. I haven't seen one of these, the original iPods, in many years. And it got me thinking, how do we consume music these days? Throughout all of our lives, I'm sure we've all done vinyl and then cassette tapes, CDs, iPods of some sort. And I just thought it'd be interesting to ask you how you listen to music.
Online streaming, I think.
Yeah.
Now. We're just clearing out one of the rooms of the house and we found about 200 CDs.
Mm.
So I've loaded them all up to the laptop and they're now in a memory stick.
Okay.
So you've got total access to either that kind of music.
Yeah.
But it's handy through your phone, isn't it, which plugs into the car, so it's all around you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm old, so I mean, even if I can do it, anybody can do it.
So you listen to music via your phone a lot of the time?
Via the phone or through like, the home entertainment system, which again is linked to the internet, so it's down the big S word for one of the streaming systems or iTunes, then, you know, it's a really good way to do it.
Definitely. You the same, Jamie?
I have an original iPod.
Ooh.
In my car. Plugged in. And I can, through a USB cable and through an AUX cable, I can listen to my original iPod in the car.
What?
And the problem is I can't change tracks or do anything.
Why can't you change tracks?
Well, I have to look at it. I can, but not legally.
Not supposed
depends
to,
who's listening. And also now with the drones they're going to put up, I probably wouldn't. But yes, I still have one. It's still going strong. It's full to the gunnels of music. And because of Apple, I cannot take the music off that. You can't take the music off that and put it somewhere else.
No.
You can take the hard drive out, take it to a specialist who can maybe take the hard drive apart. Because it's all in Apple code, it's absolutely useless.
It's terrible, isn't it,
And I've got films on it, I've got movies on it, I've got series on it, I've got all sorts of stuff on it. I used to travel with this, plug it into hotel rooms around the world, watch The Sopranos on video on it. It came with video cables. I do not understand. My wife and I were quite sad yesterday when the news came out that iPods had gone. We've got about four or five in the house.
Really?
And they're generally all stacked with different music from different eras. So.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It is annoying that you can't transfer it anywhere else.
No, I can't suck it off and put it into iTunes.
No.
Because some of it was given to me. Some people put it on from computers over the years.
Right.
And, you know, but yeah, I'd say 95% of the music on there was paid for. But because it's on an iPod and not in a computer, I can't do anything with it. It's just got to stay
annoying,
on the iPod.
Isn't it? Yeah. Really annoying. So when you're listening to music at home, do you do that through the iPod and plug it into an entertainment
system? No, iPod stays in the car. At home now it's Apple Music streaming.
Okay.
Alexa.
Got so many options, haven't we?
But that's the problem. There's the options. Yeah.
So have you got rid of all your other have you got rid of CDs and cassette tapes and vinyl and all of that? Is that all gone from your house?
Yes. I got rid of my vinyl collection. I got rid of my record player. All CDs went when we moved house. Haven't even got DVDs anymore.
No, it's weird, isn't it? And have you got rid of all of yours, Quentin?
No.
No.
We've still got original vinyl records from, I guess, the 60s, 70s, 80s and before the days of CD. We don't play them. They don't have a record player. But it's just something I wouldn't... You know, you go back to the days where there was a new single released every single week and the first thing you did with your pocket money was to go out and buy the new 45 and stack them in the record player to get music.
Yeah.
And it's just something that... Okay, now it could be classed as clutter, but I just don't want to give them up.
No. Well, fair enough. I think clutter is when you've got loads of stuff that you don't really know why you've got it or where it is. But if you've got some things like that that you're keeping for sentimental reasons, that's fine. As long as it's not like floor to ceiling in every room. Oh, no, it's floor to ceiling.
The look tells all that.
my idea of clutter is a tidy mess.
Okay.
My wife's idea is somewhat different.
Yes.
And she's the tidy one, so.
Okay, interesting. Well, that rolls on nicely to my next article about pantry porn. If you dream that one day your messy kitchen might not look as if it's recently been scavenged by a pack of ravenous bears, you need pantry porn. So I was going to save this to talk about with the women, but I thought it would be really interesting to talk about with you guys. It's become a thing in recent years, certainly during lockdown, and the whole idea of not only decluttering, but becoming really, really organised and having all like your herbs and spices labelled, putting all your pasta and your rice into separate jars and labelling, all that kind of stuff. And I'm assuming it's something that women are more likely to do. But I thought I'd kind of ask you, A, if you have that in your house, B, whether you'd be remotely bothered about it at all, or whether you think, oh, that looks nice and neat and organised.
I'll let Jimmy go first. I'm just thinking about my last comments on making a cluster generally. Yeah. So.
Definitely nothing's labelled in our house at all.
Okay.
We don't have anything jar. We just have see-through jars for coffee and tea, like normal people. There's nothing labelled.
Yeah.
Pasta's in the box. And no.
And you're fine with that.
But we had a new kitchen installed, so we can now see everything. So before, it was a bit difficult. But no, I don't think Beverly and I, being working hard, we've got time to be repackaging and why put something out of a container into another container?
Yes, and there is a point there.
Why have two containers? Yeah. Something that comes in cardboard and plastic, why are you going to take it out and put it into another plastic container and then write on the container? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Fair enough. I'm glad
you read that piece of paper, because I read a completely different headline.
Yes, I was nervous about having that word in there.
I put my glasses on first, so it was all right. We cook a lot, probably Margaret more than I, but and all the common ingredients that she uses are in either the original jars, but for like rice and pasta, we have plastic containers so we can decant it into it, and it keeps it, because dried pasta, it may keep it fresher, but again, we know exactly where it is.
Mm.
I use a lot of Asian condiments and things when I'm cooking, and they're slightly less organised, but there's a theme coming through here, isn't there, about my organisational skills?
Yes.
But I think it's nice that if you're an organised kitchen, if you use it a lot, and I know that the two of you cook a lot, that it just means you know where everything is and you can just get it very, very quickly.
Yeah. And it
looks
look
smart.
Nice. Yes, yes. Okay, interesting. Well answered. We'll take a break there.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk today with me in the studio, Jamie Stonehewer and Quentin Seller. There's an article talking about baked beans. It says, forget three-course meals washed down with expensive wine. A tin of beans is fit for the future queen. The Duchess of Cornwall has revealed her modest tastes, as she loves nothing more than Heinz beans on toast or fish and chips wrapped in paper. I thought that was interesting. Obviously, I'm sure she has access to all the most lovely food items and dishes and things in the world. She's probably cooked for every day and is used to fine dining on a daily occurrence, I'm sure. So I thought it was fascinating that she said she likes beans on toast. And I wondered if there's any kind of simple meals like that that you would enjoy on a regular basis.
We do. I mean, I travel a lot in business, and staying in hotels, you're eating fairly well. Or when you go on a holiday, you go out and you have really nice meals. And I think it is very, very pleasant to be able to just sit down one night and have a boiled egg or beans and toast or something really simple.
Mm.
It's comfort food.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know about you, but we do find, if we've been away for 2 weeks in a holiday, eating out every single night.
Mm.
You get to the point, well, I don't really want another bit of fish like that or anything else. I just want something easy and simple to eat.
Yeah. We have a lot of salads. That's my kind of... Well, I say simple. I mean, you can all kinds of different things in a salad, but I love the simple... Because we like eating out as well, and I love the simplicity of a salad with a really nice dressing, and so we have a lot of salads at home, and I love it. That's that really... Yeah.
There's
can't
always
beat a good
beans,
salad.
Always beans in the cupboard. There's
yeah,
always
same.
Got to be beans in the house. But
yeah.
A baked potato with beans and a bit of cheese.
Yeah.
Always beans in our house. And we live in a place with fantastic restaurants. We all like eating out. But like my friend said here, simple, nice, hearty food.
You know,
and quick and easy. But so the question should be, how many people have not got beans in their house? Because I bet everyone's got baked beans in their house,
some
I'm sure.
Yesterday, actually.
Yeah, there you go, you see.
But we would normally have baked beans as a kind of breakfast thing on a weekend.
Yeah.
With like some scrambled eggs, some mushrooms and some baked beans on toast, something like that, of a weekend. That's where we would have it.
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
I think salad's just got your point. Where we live, we've got access to so many good and fresh fruit and vegetables. And again, I agree with your comment that, you know, in our minds, a salad in the UK used to be lettuce, tomato, cucumber, onion, and that was probably it.
Yeah.
Whereas what we do now is that we combine fruit with nuts. And spinach or rocket.
Yeah.
And just different things. So that
you get so many different textures and flavours.
Textures, flavours, and you mix them together and you think that's not going to work. But then when you actually eat it, you get this explosion of flavour in your mouth.
And the power of a good dressing can transform a salad with, if you've got olive oil, lemon juice, honey, mustard.
Maple syrup.
Those kind of things. Oh, maple syrup. Mm. Wow. Yes, that does it, definitely, the dressing. Just had a message from Debbie in Combater who says, baked beans, food of the devil. You can't please everyone. Thanks, Debbie. That's funny. There's an article talking about dreams. Do you dream about shoes, squirrels, or all your teeth falling out? It all depends where you come from, says an expert who's been analysing sleep for 40 years. I thought that was interesting until I read the next bit, which I just thought sounded absolutely ridiculous, when there's a list of different things. And apparently, if you're from Namibia, you dream about squirrels. From Greece, you dream about hats. In Ethiopia, you dream about shoes. In Chile, you dream about mice. I just thought it was ridiculous making it so specific like that. But I thought I'd ask you about dreams. Do you remember your dreams regularly?
Bits of them.
Yeah.
I don't know why. The bit that got me in that article was that in Greece they dream about hats.
Yeah, exactly. Think, how bizarre.
Where does that come from?
Exactly, yeah. Anyway. Just bizarre. Doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, I think sometimes you remember a dream. Sometimes they can be fairly straightforward. Sometimes they can be very, very complex. You dream about people you met the day before, and it's weird.
Mm.
I find sometimes you wake up and you think, oh, I've been dreaming about, and you must have been in that point where you're coming out of deep sleep into normal sleep or waking up and the dream stops.
Yes.
But you actually want it to continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you not have recurring dreams?
Not since I was a child and were monsters.
Oh, yeah. I used to dream about monsters as well. What about you, Jamie?
I'm actually having a sort of bad stage of sleep at the moment for the last month and a half, and it's generally because I'm having really vivid dreams, and they're really vivid when I'm in them, and then I wake up and I can't remember them.
Oh, really?
And I don't know, they're all about all sorts of things. It's quite a bit of stress going on, the play we were just in and all that sort of stuff. But there's no, you know, life's pretty good. I don't understand why, but it's okay. According to my sleep tracker, I'm sleeping well, but according to my brain, I'm not. So, do I remember dreams? Sometimes, yeah. People study this because it needs studying, I think, sleep. And, would I go and sit with all the wires on me and lie in the hospital? And no, I don't think I need to. But, yeah, I have really vivid dreams at the moment, and then I just, they feel really, really realistic when I'm in them. I wake up and they're just gone. I don't know. So, the thing about cats and hats, that's very strange, isn't it?
Very weird.
That's just a page.
I think I definitely tend to remember bad dreams more than remembering good dreams. Very rarely, I think, would I wake up and say, oh, what a lovely dream. I had this really nice dream. And whereas I'll remember and say, oh, God, that was a horrible dream, and can wake up quite traumatised sometimes, having a really horrible dream about death and all kinds of things going wrong and, oh, awful. But thankfully, not often, not for quite a while. But I think generally, we remember more bad dreams than good dreams, I guess, coming from childhood, possibly.
I think that the one theme that does seem to reoccur is the feeling of falling.
I've read somewhere that
it's quite common to dream of falling, and what's happened is you've actually stopped breathing.
Oh.
And you ever had the situation where you'll suddenly jerk awake?
Yeah.
And they say if you have that dream and you're falling and you land, you won't wake up.
Oh.
So that's why if you do have these dreams, you will get this jerking reaction, which is your brain effectively saying, look, you've got to start breathing again.
Oh, how interesting. Oh, well, hopefully that keeps happening then. Oh, dear. There's a piece here that I thought was really interesting, talking about doing your own life audit. I thought we could just look at the first bit. So it's the idea of getting older, and instead of thinking that your life is over, basically, you can kind of do a life audit and look back again, back into your past, look forward to your future, and kind of analyze things. I thought it was fascinating. So, think of your early 60s as a time of transition. There are a number of such times, leaving school, getting a job, getting married, but the difference now is you've got decades of experience behind you. That's what you'll use to make this next stage, your third act, the best it can possibly be. So this is one of the things that it recommends. Go back in time. Think about what you wanted to do with your life when you were 10, 15 or 21. What made your stomach flip with excitement? Was it lying in a field watching butterflies? I thought that's a really bizarre example. Reading novels or running the history club at school? What happened to that first obsession? Think about how you can reconnect with those passions now. So if you were looking back to... your earlier life, what were some of the things that excited you that you thought, oh, well, I'm going to do that when I'm 30, or when I'm 40, I'm going to do this? Can you remember things like that? We're just going to say hello to Andreas.
Hi, Andreas.
How are you doing, Andreas?
Hello, guys. What time do you call these, huh?
welcome. Were you stuck in traffic? It was
crazy.
Yes,
I was, yeah.
Oh, bless you. Don't worry. We're just talking about doing a life audit. This is the recommendation as you were kind of approaching your early 60s, or maybe you're already in your early 60s. I don't know why they're saying 60s. Forget the age. We can talk about whatever age. But the idea of getting older and sort of resetting and thinking about your earlier life, your earlier years, and what did you want to see in your future, and whether you've achieved that, or whether your dreams changed, or whether you can still achieve what you wanted to achieve that you haven't done already, basically.
Speaking as a man who's just come into his 60s,
okay.
It's a hard question to answer. I think if I go back to when I was a teenager, what was in my mind was leaving school and the first career path that I wanted to do.
Mm. Which was what?
I wanted to become a Royal Naval Officer.
Okay.
Which I did.
Oh, brilliant. That's nice.
And then changed my mind.
Yeah.
But it was, so I did the climbing in the tall ships.
Okay.
But again, a long time ago. And that was my focus.
Mm.
And then as your life changes and moves on, you adapt or you change. But I've never mapped out my life at any point.
Mm.
Probably until now, when I'm thinking about the point I will stop working 7 or 8 years.
Mm.
You know, the things I want to do while I'm still working and things I want to do when I stop working.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, I've had goals of the things I want to achieve at a certain time, and some I've done, some I haven't done.
Mm.
But it's, I'm actually stuck for words, which doesn't happen very often.
What about you, Jamie?
I'm more of a seize the day sort of person. So, I try not to think about the future too much. What was I thinking at 12? I couldn't tell you. At 15, it was just getting through school. At 21, yes, I was here. I was living in Marbella. So at 21, I was pretty much out and about partying, and I didn't really think of anything apart from getting more beer tokens. So... would I do a life audit? Yeah, I'd always try and look back and think what happened. You know, at 15 I was running back from school every day so I wouldn't get beaten up by the bullies. So it was trying to get away from school, and then my parents said, let's go and live in Marbella. Yes, I'll come. no problem whatsoever. So, yeah, it's hard because if I dwell too much in the past, it's trouble. If I dwell too much in the future, it's trouble. So I'm a bit more of a one day at a time sort of guy, trying to trying to put the boxes in order for the future. But yeah, and my wife's like, oh no, it'll take care of itself. And I'm trying to be a bit more, no, it won't take care of itself. We need to be a bit more practical. So it's a tricky one. But yeah, I think a life audit or any type of audit, any sort of inventory, especially your personal inventory, is a good idea.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think, Andrea?
I would have wanted to, by now, I would have wanted to be an aging rock star. but I'm just aging. So yeah, that was the idea and in my earlier years. But I don't regret anything that's happened. I think everything I'm about lucky to have had a good life generally. A healthy touch wood up to now. I don't regret anything.
That's good.
And I think we're all very lucky to live where we live. Especially living down here, but to more simple things, to the fact that we live in a place where you turn the tap and water comes out, that is amazing. When you think that a third of the population in the world don't have that luxury, and wait a minute, if you turn the other tap, it comes out hot. So there's nothing to regret. I think we're lucky and we're good.
Definitely. No, it's good.
Still time to become a rock star, though.
Yes, there is still time. Of course. Yeah, I think it's a real shame to have regrets. You know, we can you know, have made mistakes or whatever, but to have regrets, I think, is a real shame, because you can't really do anything about that. You can think of things that you did that maybe you wish you didn't, and you can think, okay, well, I won't do that again. You know, you can learn from it. You can change the way you behave or the way you do things or whatever, but to live with regrets must be a really horrible kind of thing, isn't it? It's not a nice, place to be.
You have to and look forward to the future as well. That's important. Yes, of course, like you were saying, live the present, of course, but to look forward to the future, because this, you know, the exciting thing's going to happen. Like a war in Ukraine, for instance.
Oh no. Right, we'll take a break there.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Jamie Stone-Hewer, Andreas Gallardo and Quentin Seller. There's an article talking about, the headline actually is, "Eating out didn't make me fat, but counting the calories did." Again, I was going to save this to talk about with the women, and I thought the whole idea of counting calories, it sort of sounds to me like something that women are more likely to do than men. So I thought it would be interesting to ask you whether you'd ever thought about things like that when you're buying food from the supermarket, when you're ordering food off a menu. Are you thinking about these kinds of things?
Well, funny enough, I've just visited the UK, and I've noticed in restaurants all menus have got the calorie count of the dish.
Okay.
Luckily, I was with someone, because I don't know anything about calories. I never question the calorie situation or how much intake or any of that. But the person I was with knew quite a lot about dieting and healthy eating and everything else. And she told me it's the most pointless thing that you can have, because the calorie count is so relative to what you do, the amount of exercise, how tall you are, how, you know, your lifestyle and everything else. So counting calories is not going to help at all. And talking to the restaurant manager or owner that I was discussing the issue with, they've had to put so much work into having to work out all the calories for a pointless exercise. So from the men point of view, I've learned a lot about calories, and now I know that reading the calories in the menu is absolutely pointless.
There you are. Jamie?
Never counted calories. You know if it's bad for you, if it's sweet and gooey. So yeah. I know it's got more calories in if it's sweet and gooey. And if I eat lots of things that are sweet and gooey, I need to do more exercise. That's as close to calorie counting as I've ever got.
I agree with Jamie completely that I have counted calories in the past, but it's like you get to the point where if you've got to have a maximum, right, you're taking that to too much detail.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you go home and have a salad, or you go out and have a McDonald's, you will know that the McDonald's is not nearly as healthy as the a normal salad would be.
Yeah.
Or any kind of fast food which is full of sugar. But to have to actually count them right down to the minute level, it's irrelevant. It could mean another, okay, I've got to walk another 2 minutes in that day to burn off the extra ones.
Yeah, I couldn't be bothered with all that.
Well, I would say, sorry, very, very quickly, that we were in Seville a few years ago and walked for hours in the morning and then checked on my phone and said, you've burned off X number of calories. And we stopped for an ice cream on the way home. I actually worked out that we could have three or four of them because of all the walking we'd done earlier on, that if we wanted them.
Yeah.
So there can be benefits to knowing that the calorific value and of what you're doing, what you're burning out,
and
burning off.
Well, the problem with calories is that someone tells me 2,000 calories or 3,000 calories. I wouldn't know the effect of one or the other. Yeah, I don't know if 2,000 is too high or 3,000 is acceptable. Do you know what I mean? I have no concept of
no,
what the value of calories has. And as you say, I mean, if it's got a lot of sugar, I assume it'll have lots of calories. And as you said, you're going to have to run the block, go running around the block a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all... but to have it compulsory on menus in restaurants, as I said before, it's a pointless exercise and quite annoying, I guess, for the chefs in the restaurants to have to work out all the figures and then print it and have printed new menus and everything else for something that is not really going to help anyone, really.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because there will be people that will be calorie counting and will find it really helpful, but as you say, it can make a huge difference how much exercise that person is doing and also their body size and shape to begin with and all that kind
even
of stuff.
Even the time of year, because apparently in the summer you burn more, in the winter you burn less, so all of those things have an effect on the calorie burning or whatever.
Interesting. Before we get into wokeness, let's take a break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Jamie Stone-Hewer, Andreas Gallardo and Quinton Seller. We're going on to the subject of woke, which comes up every week, but there's only one article today, which is good, really good. It's talking about nursery rhymes. They are centuries old and have enchanted generations of children. But now nursery rhymes such as Bar Bar Black Sheep have gone woke, with the words changed to reflect a kinder attitude towards animals. I assumed we were going to be talking about the colour black, and that was the bit that was going to change, but no. Bar Bar Black Sheep, which parents and teachers sing to children, traditionally starts, Bar Bar Black Sheep, have you any wool? But in a new version, the sheep explains it's not cool to steal wool and refuses to provide any for the pastor, dame or little boy who lives down the lane. I didn't realise it was about stealing wool. I assumed it was buying wool. Have you any wool, like, to buy as opposed to steal? So I was confused by that. Anyway, did you think it was about stealing wool?
No.
No, me neither. Meanwhile, the line in Little Miss Muffet, which tells of a girl being frightened away by a spider, has been changed to say it brightened Miss Muffet's day. Miss Muffet has also become vegan. Instead of eating curds and whey, she's watching the bluebirds play. That did make me laugh. In This Little Piggy, the mention of roast beef becomes roast beets. B-E-E-T-S. And in Three Blind Mice, the line, they all run after the farmer's wife who cut off their tails with a carving knife, has been scrapped. It is replaced with the mice still running after the farmer's wife, but the next lines are, they told her, thank you for saving their life. Did you ever see someone acting as nice as Three Blind Mice? Oh, is this madness?
Yes.
There we go. Next article.
Well, I mean, you're never going to remember the new versions, are you? You're only ever going to remember the old versions.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've read a nursery rhyme, having not had any children. But, I mean, some nursery rhymes were I'm thinking a tissue, we all fall down. It was about the plague.
Yeah.
So what, you're going to just rewrite that and forget about the plague?
Yeah.
And it was teaching children to stay away from people that were sneezing.
Mm.
And I'm sure a little bit of Miss Muffet and the spider was probably where there were poison spiders. Check your seat before you sit down. In Africa, you check your bed before you get in it, you know, for spiders. In Australia, they check the bed and the tent before they get in. And some of the nursery rhymes were a way of teaching children, historically.
Yeah.
So they're going to change it, that she was pleased to see a spider. Well, that's not going to work as a health and safety advert, is it?
No.
So I don't understand why they're messing with our nursery rhymes, isn't it? Do Spanish people have nursery rhymes?
I was going to say, I'm not very strong on nursery rhymes, yeah, because in Spain we don't have nursery rhymes, or I don't remember having nursery rhymes. But all these forcing the issue so much, you know, let the kids grow up with the traditions and the things, and let them make up their minds later on in life when they can decide whether they want to be vegan or not, or whether they want to treat spiders nicely or kill them or whatever. just to force it so much upon people it's just too much.
Yeah,
it's just too much. I had an experience or a conversation. Someone whose friend is gender fluid. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, if we meet this person, just be careful how you use your language. And I said, no, I'm not having that. At my age, I'm not going to start changing the language because I might call someone she and she wants to be we or whatever is the word you have to refer to them. I'm too old for that. I'm not going to relearn the language to not to offend someone. They have to be strong enough if they want to be that gender fluid to understand that we're not going to have to pussyfoot around the person, not to offend them. They have to be strong enough to be able to carry the way they want to be. That's my
interesting. And what was the reaction of your friend?
Oh, my friend said, "Oh, you better not don't meet
them. Don't meet them. Stay home."
We'll miss that one.
You're off the Christmas card, friend, right?
Oh, brilliant. Anyone else that comment on that?
No, I agree with Andreas. I think it's okay. People have a right to be called what they want to be called, but if you start having to think of words, we know what bad words are and what good words are. But in general conversation, if you have to start thinking about being very, very careful exactly what you say all the time, then as long as you're not genuinely rude to somebody. But you wouldn't be able to speak because, all right, what can I say? Who do I call you? What do I call you?
And yeah.
I'm thinking more about that than actually what I want to say to somebody.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. There's an article that I initially thought, what? How ridiculous. But then I thought, well, yeah, I for sure it's not right. I just thought sexual harassment sounded a bit strong. The headline says, calling a woman good girl at work is sexual harassment. This is according to a judge in a male bullying tribunal. Male bosses should not praise female workers by calling them good girl, a judge has warned. Employment judge Gary Tobin said, words evolve over time and can go from being harmless to demeaning. Yes, I was just trying to picture a female boss saying to a man in an office environment, good boy. I mean, it would never happen, would it? So the first thing that I would think that it's being really condescending, because assuming they're talking about a woman in a workplace and not an actual girl, so therefore calling a woman good girl is just weird and wrong. And yeah, I don't get the sexual harassment bit, though.
I don't get the sexual harassment, and I don't think it's from where I'm sitting, I don't see it as being offensive. It's like a woman can say, I used to work with a lady who said, come on, be a good boy, make me a cup of tea.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay,
interesting.
So, and I didn't take offence to that. And
okay.
I used to say, yeah, it's a cup of tea time, so let's do it.
Okay.
It's a lot of the language in these cases is the tone of the language, not
yes,
the words.
Yes.
Depends on how you say it. Because the tone of the language will determine if you are being rude to someone or not.
Mm.
Sometimes the words don't, you know, because you could say, like this lady would say to me, come on, be a good boy and make a cup of tea.
Yeah.
That's not offensive. But if you change the tone,
yeah,
I could
definitely
have taken offense. But
and just the phrase good girl, I suppose you could say it in so many different ways.
Exactly.
You could say it in a way that would definitely come across as a sexual comment, if you like. You can say it in a way where it's just really condescending, or you can say it in a way that's a bit of fun between two colleagues or something. I don't know.
As a phrase, it's something you or I'd associate with it, is how you talk to a dog. Good girl, good boy.
Yeah,
a young child learning to be potty trained. It's that kind of, it can be demeaning.
Yeah.
But again, you can hear yourself, hear myself saying to one of my female colleagues, wow, good girl, as if it's exactly the tone.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be patronising or demeaning.
No, it's definitely all about tone, isn't it? As opposed to those two words being categorically wrong. It's
the tone,
Okay.
Definitely, yeah.
Forget big weddings, now couples are partying at the pub. A lot more weddings that are taking place. Instead of hiring massive venues and spending a massive amount of money, a lot of people are getting together at the pub afterwards. I thought this sounded like a great idea. I don't see why not.
Well, we discussed this in...
we were talking about earlier.
And my wedding was in that we had a pub lunch for...
Oh, nice.
Only afford 45 people for lunch from when we got married. And then everyone was invited to the pub in the evening.
Yeah.
And, it was normal. And it's a great... In England, pubs need business, so I don't... Looking at the article, there's lots of pubs that need the business in the UK.
Mm.
They're virtually... There's lots of little communities, and the only thing they've got is a pub now.
Mm.
Everything else is gone, so...
And did you know the pub? Was it, like, a local, or
It was
did
my
you...
mother-in-law and father-in-law's local.
Perfect. So you have that connection there.
They put the buffet on the... Cover the pool table, a bit of wood, typical Yorkshire fare, sandwiches.
Brilliant.
and the evening do was in a pub.
Great.
I've been to lots of weddings in nice marquees and everything else, but virtually it's just a pub with a tent, isn't it?
So,
there's not a lot of difference, but I think the pubs need the business, and I think and it's also people are counting the pennies, and especially at the moment in the UK. So, why not use the local bar instead of pub, bar, whatever? You know,
it's interesting. In the Spanish press recently, I read an article that said that the bigger the wedding, the longer the marriage lasts. So if you have a small wedding with just only a few people invited, apparently those marriages last less than those who marry with a big crowd.
Really?
I read in the press, so don't take it too seriously.
No.
it's quite interesting. But I don't disagree to have weddings, original weddings, are more fun than the traditional hotel setup, which can be sometimes can be boring. So something original is it's a bit more fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, as Jamie was saying, we had a quick chat about this before we came in, and when we got married, we had it in a pub restaurant with a small number of people because that's all we could afford at the time. But also, I think the Spanish weddings I've been to have always been really big affairs, but that's the culture, and it's expected, and it's normal. Possibly with COVID in the UK, I think people are now... They'll be more careful how they spend their money, or they're finding that they've got more disposable income, and therefore they want to use it to buy a new house. So they'll keep the wedding small or just invite people they really want to invite.
Yeah, prioritising.
Yeah.
There was a very, very expensive wedding that took place a month or so ago. Brooklyn Beckham and his new wife, Nicola Peltz. The £380 million fortune of David and Victoria Beckham was dwarfed by the estimated £1.3 billion wealth of Miss Peltz's financier father, Nelson. Talking about prenups, there was one hell of a prenup, apparently, that was signed for this young couple in their 20s. Have we discussed prenups before? Because it is a subject that's come up before. Andreas,
Not with me in this program.
Okay.
What I know about prenups, they're quite normal in the United States. I don't think they would be enforceable in under Spanish law.
Really interesting.
So I understand. So
okay.
You need to check with someone who's into sort of marital law and that sort of thing. But it wouldn't be enforceable in Spain. What do I think about it?
Would it bother you if you were with a wealthy woman and she wanted you to sign a prenup?
If she was very wealthy, I would sign anything.
Good answer.
No, it wouldn't bother me. It's just a way of saying, you know, if things go wrong in the future, we know where we stand. It wouldn't particularly bother me, no.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm old-fashioned now. I don't
Yeah, you'd find it.
Well, we did our wedding vows, and the wedding vows are there. I mean, if we get divorced down the line, we get divorced down the line. Just split everything 50-50. I don't see... I can understand in their case why a prenup, a concrete prenup, may be needed, but neither of the children seem to be gold diggers. They've both got very wealthy parents, so it's protecting them. But there was something on at lunchtime today, and they were talking about all weddings should have a contract 25 years, and then you can leave.
What?
And it's like, well, no. You know, this is what people are talking about, because they're discussing prenups and everything. And there was a gay gentleman on. He said he reckons every 6 months they need to renew the contract. So where do you stop? Divorce is a lot easier than it used to be. I've got friends that have divorced and married three times at my age. And it's like, well, no. You know, I'm in a strong, committed relationship with my wife, and we're very happy at the moment. And so, but if we had a bit of paper, would it make any difference? I think it makes it easier to leave if you have a prenup.
Yeah.
I don't think people would fight as hard for a marriage.
No, that's true.
No, that's a good point.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And it does, it's not very romantic, is it? I mean, I get that it's a kind of normal thing in these sorts of situations, but it does seem like a strange kind of alien thing to do.
What I find is strange is you can sign a prenup now, but circumstances change over the years. You could sort of lose all your money, and then the other party is more wealthy than you.
Yeah, definitely.
Or you give up work to help, you know, a new adventure with your other partner, so you're part of that that new setup. So that prenup could be outdated by the change of circumstances.
Definitely. There's another article following on saying why every marriage should have a pet nup, and it's the idea if you've got a pet when you get together with your partner that there should be some kind of some kind of contract drawn up, because who gets the dog?
She gets a dog, in my case, definitely. And a cat.
You're not an animal person. So, yeah, I mean, I can see why this can be a big problem, can't it? If people split up and they have pets that they've loved together for many years, I'm guessing this must come up a lot, you know, like a child in many cases. You know, who gets the pets?
Well, I think pets can also keep a couple together. I think maybe before pets were passport, my wife might have just taken the dog and gone if she could, but she didn't. She couldn't take the pet, so she stayed. You know, and we're still together now. So, I think pet nups. Oh, I think it's all money for lawyers, isn't it? Are lawyers getting really quiet? Do they need to keep dreaming up new contracts, another €300 to sign these two bits, then a notary? Yeah. You know, where do you stop?
I reckon.
We could never find these bits of paper if we all had them anyway.
No, that's true. That's true. We'd lose them. But yeah, I just thought that was a bizarre thing about doing a contract. But it made me think, I imagine this must happen a lot, that couples split up and there can be massive arguments as to who keeps what pets. You know, if they've got one dog that they've loved like a child, you know, which a lot of people say they have that relationship with their pets, with dogs particularly, then there must be some massive rows as to who keeps the dog.
You get visitation rights.
Yeah, exactly. One of you has the dog over the weekend. I'm sure that must happen.
I'm
couples
sure it
have
does.
To work that kind of stuff out, definitely. Well, we've coming to the end of the show. Thank you all very much for coming in today. Jamie Stone, Hewer, Andreas Gallardo and Quinton Seller. Thank you all. Happy weekend. I know it's only Thursday, but it's the weekend for me from tomorrow. Coming up after the news is Bob James with Spain Today. And I will be back on Monday. I was just going to tell you who I've got on Monday. Bob James obviously starts off the day and the week with a look at the Spanish news. Rachel Haynes from the Sir in English and Watchdog, the Consumer Survival Guide.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.